planner and senior advocate Danielle Aragone. Her new book, Climate Resilience for an Aging Nation, is both a diagnosis and a handbook for action. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org and check out www.resilienceforanagingnation.com. Daniel, thank you for helping us out on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy to be here.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Superstorms, firestorms, extreme everything. Who can keep up? The United Nations weather team has been running hard. The World Meteorological Organization once was slow on climate change way back, no more. Last year, they led the big United Science report, warning the warming world was heading into uncharted territory of destruction. Sure enough, all that arrived big time this year in 2023. For our guide, we reached Lauren Stewart. With her master's degree in climate change and international development, Stewart has been on the ground in Nepal and in Congress for Oxfam America. Now she is scientific officer for the WMO. From Geneva, Lauren Stewart, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
In May 2023, the World Meteorological Organization predicted global temperatures would reach new records in the next 5 years. But did your team expect the mind-boggling, record-smashing heat all over the Northern Hemisphere so soon this summer?
You know, I don't think anyone expected what we saw this summer. Truly record-breaking temperatures across the globe. And not only record-breaking temperatures, but also sea surface temperatures were record-breaking as well. And it caught all of us off guard. But with the new El Nino currently happening, we can expect temperatures to continue to increase. And this could be one of the warmest years on record again.
Well, right, as July boiled over in stupefying temperatures, UN Secretary General Guterres said, climate change is here, it is terrifying, and it is just the beginning. The WMO certified July 2023 as the hottest in history ever. What about August, September, and 2023 in general?
We continued to see record-breaking temperatures throughout the summer, not just in July. September, again, was an incredibly warm month. And like I said, because we have El Nino currently in place, which makes the equatorial Pacific sea surface temperatures warmer, we can expect to see warming temperatures across the globe as a result of that. And likely we won't feel the real impact of that El Nino for a few more months. So it's possible that 2024 could be even warmer than what we're seeing now.
Is most of the WMO work done in centers around the world, or is it at Geneva headquarters? How does it work? And were you in overdrive for this year's record-breaking weather?
That's a really great question, because a lot of people are surprised to find out that at the World Meteorological Organization, we don't actually do science and research ourselves. The United Nations, any UN agency, we're responsible for really facilitating international collaboration. And so at the WMO, what we do is we bring some of the world's best weather and climate and water scientists together to collaborate and really try to address some of these pressing issues around climate change and extreme weather events. So we play a really unique role, but I think it surprises quite a few people.
Right. We picture massive desks of people all watching over screens. And in fact, you're collating what other scientists are doing. Is that the right picture?
Yeah, you can think of it that way. We bring people together. We help enable international collaboration. You know, for example, we have several research programs at the World Meteorological Organization, and we don't do the research ourselves, but we help coordinate all of those researchers across the world to tackle some of these really big research questions about weather and climate.
It's not just the heat this year. In the last week of October 2023, strong storms raked the planet. Listeners in the UK and Ireland were buffeted. Three amazing cyclones hit Mexico, Yemen, and Vanuatu all at the same time. Is it fair to say the world's storm system is destabilized?
Well, these storms, I mean, they're increasing in frequency and intensity, and that's something that we have expected as a result of climate change and also natural variability. But I think it just, you know, emphasizes the real need for weather science and climate science to keep an eye on these extreme events. And this also emphasizes the need of early warning systems, because we have so many of these extreme tropical cyclones, for example, like you were mentioning, and it's crucial to get those early warnings out to the public so that they can respond in time to take actions to mitigate any harm.
And they have to be fast warning systems, because Hurricane Otis spun up from a tropical storm to the strongest possible Cat 5 hurricane in about 12 hours. It's the biggest hurricane ever recorded in the Eastern Pacific, and it slammed into Acapulco. So I wonder, what can we do? I mean, we can put up sirens. We can make buildings more resistant to what? What can we do?
That's a really good point. You know, some of these storms, like we just saw with Otis, I mean, as a meteorologist myself, even that surprised me, how quickly that storm developed and strengthened and then made landfall. But that just emphasizes the need to continue our research efforts into better understanding how rapid intensification occurs and improving our models so that we have a better idea of how strong these storms will get and how quickly they will gain strength and who they might impact the most. But it also means that we have to build resilient societies, because these storms will continue to happen. And even with early warning systems in place that are effective and reach those who need it the most, damage can still occur. And so it's important that we build strong infrastructure, like you mentioned, and increase resilience across these communities.
Well, we know storms are just part of the new water system developing on a warmer planet. The WMO says the hydrological cycle is spinning out of balance. What does that mean?
Right. So what we see with climate change in particular is that it's altering our water cycle as we know it. And this makes it really difficult to effectively monitor water resources and manage them. So we need a better understanding of how these changes are happening and what we can continue to expect in the future. And again, this comes back to the importance of the science and research behind it in order to help us better understand these changes in the water cycle in order to better improve our hydrological planning.
Of all the continents, Africa has the lowest greenhouse gas emissions per person. The average African emits about 1 ton of CO2 a year, compared to about 7 tons for each European and 10 tons for North Americans. The World Meteorological Organization is reaching out to include Africans. Tell us about your recent programs there.
Of course. I'm actually in Africa right now. I'm in Rwanda for the World Climate Research Program's Open Science Conference, which is a once-in-a-decade climate conference that has brought together climate researchers and also weather researchers and social scientists and early career scientists as well, and has brought us all together here in Rwanda to talk about how we can advance climate science to help society. And we actually have about a third of the participants here are from Africa. And so we really want to engage them, because they have so much expertise, not only in these sciences, but they know Africa best. And that local information is absolutely crucial to bring into the climate and weather science to make sure it is effective for different populations.
Last September, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the world was going from global warming to global boiling, as we're heading now. He was talking about the 2022 report from a group called United in Science. Who is that, and why was this coalition formed?
Right, so United in Science, it started about 5 years ago under the direction of the UN Secretary General, and WMO spearheads this report every year, and the idea behind it was to bring together different UN organizations and other international organizations working on weather and climate and write up a report that summarizes some of the latest climate findings. And so we just released the latest United in Science report for 2023. And this year we did a different approach. We started the report with a state of the science where we summarized those latest scientific findings. And then we explored how weather, water, and climate science help support sustainable development, because 2023 is a really important year. It's the halfway point to achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Right. And right after this report, the UN Sustainable Development Goals Summit was held in New York, and the game plan has big targets to reach less than 7 years away. But apparently, only 15% of those goals are on track to happen. Can you talk to us about that?
That's right. We are not on track to achieve the SDGs by 2030, and now is the time to really redouble our efforts in order to achieve the 2030 agenda and the 17 sustainable development goals. And this summit that you mentioned in New York just last month was a really good opportunity to bring together different stakeholders and think about what we can do to increase ambition and really scale up the work that we're doing to achieve these goals. And this report helped to support that because it really highlights the crucial role that weather, water, and climate science play in achieving sustainable development and how we can elevate that in the coming years to make even more progress.
Well, it's going to be tough because billions of people want food safety, clean water, health care, and a better life that they don't have right now. And somehow that development has to happen without a great big burst of fossil fuels during a period of climate instability and ongoing crisis. It's a tough ask.
It is. It's really difficult. But the thing is, the sustainable development goals and also our climate goals, they have to be tackled together because they are so deeply interlinked. Of course, sustainable development is greatly impacted by climate change and extreme weather events. But on the flip side, climate change, you know, we can't achieve climate change without sustainable development, with, you know, low emissions, green energy. If we don't develop sustainably, we also won't achieve our Paris Agreement goals.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, scientific circles are buzzing. Why did land and sea temperatures spike up so high now at the very start of the El Nino event instead of in 2024 when it might have been more expected? And we hear guesses from experts naming a half dozen factors. The answers are really important to know. Did we pass a tipping point or have we triggered something? Is the WMO looking into this?
This is, of course, something we are looking into. It's hard to know at this point. These records were broken just a couple of months ago, and it takes some time to really go through the data and better understand what exactly happened. But I think we can expect to continue to see increasing temperatures, particularly with El Nino here. And I think 2024, it could continue to get even warmer. But we are definitely looking into this.
I want to pass on a little worrying news for listeners. The United Nations University has a think tank called the Institute for Environment and Human Security. It's in Bonn, Germany. On October 25th, they released their 2023 report called Interconnected Disaster Risks. It warns we approach tipping points that could, quote, destroy the very systems our life depends on, end quote. At the same time, a group of elite scientists released their report titled The 2023 State of the Climate Report, Entering Uncharted Territory. People are calling on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change to do a hurry-up report on tipping points and existential risk. Do you feel that same kind of intensity at the UN's top weather body?
I see a lot of interest across the weather and climate scientific community in increasing research on tipping points because there's a real need to better understand what exactly these tipping points are and when we might cross those thresholds and actually see these tipping points take place. So here in Kigali at this World Climate Research Program conference, we've seen a lot of scientists talking about the need to increase research on this very topic.
When I started reporting on climate change in the 1990s, TV meteorologists did not mention climate change, and some denied global warming. Now the WMO is a leading voice warning about climate change, calling for faster action. What do you think brought about that transition between the two communities of the weather watchers and the climate watchers?
I mean, I think at this point, it's just undeniable that climate change is here, it is happening, and we can actually feel the impacts ourselves. And I think this summer was a perfect example during these heat waves. People really felt it. And so I think at this point, people are coming around to this idea and realizing that we have to talk about it and we have to find solutions. And I think by far, a majority of people are on board and ready to take action.
And your own fascination with weather began at age 4. Lauren, what moved you from weather research into the international climate arena?
You know, I love playing more of a facilitation and coordination role. And I think it's really cool to bring so many scientists together into a space and enable them to collaborate. And I think the UN plays a really unique role in doing that. It's not for everyone. Not all meteorologists or scientists would, you know, enjoy the work that the UN does. It's a really special skill set, I think. But for those who enjoy that kind of thing, I just think it's really, really cool.
Well, and you may be in a position to get the big picture, which the rest of us are trying to assemble from the little pieces.
Exactly. It allows me to think about, you know, not only the science behind weather and climate, but what it means in the context of international policy, in the context of the Paris Agreement, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. And it allows me to think about how that science actually translates into impacting the lives and livelihoods of people across the world. So it's a really unique position to be in, sitting at the UN as a scientist and engaging in all of these different spaces. But I've really enjoyed it so far.
It looks like we have left the normal behind. Can we talk about weather anymore without bringing in climate change?
I think these days, these conversations often kind of blur together. But there is a lot of research being done, you know, on how do we attribute specific weather events to climate change. This is another rapidly developing field of research. And we are getting better and better at it. And these days, we can actually, for many events, very quickly identify the role that climate change played in that event to some extent. There is, of course, still uncertainty involved as well. But yeah, we are seeing that climate change is playing a role in a lot of these weather events, but there is still natural variability as well. And so these new techniques for attribution science are becoming increasingly important because across society, it's becoming increasingly important to understand how these events are impacted by climate change.
Well, this may sound strange, but I think we can also reverse that conversation and say, how is climate change being affected by extreme weather events? I mean, if you have a giant storm ripping the vegetation off the land, well, that changes how the land absorbs water or gives off water, and that can affect the climate slightly. And so it could be the two are playing with each other.
Absolutely. You know, all of these systems are deeply interconnected. Our atmosphere has no boundaries, and we have to consider all these possible interactions, and it could go both ways.
With Radio EcoShock, we have an audience of dedicated climate watchers and more than a few climate activists. How can we use the services of the WMO?
Yeah, so we do have a lot of resources on our website for the World Meteorological Organization. We publish a lot of reports, particularly on United in Science, like I said, but also the state of the global climate, on water resources, and all of those are free and accessible to the public. So in addition to the reports that we publish on a regular basis, WMO also works with national countries, and one thing that we promote is the free exchange of data. So this is really important for your everyday weather forecasting. The weather forecast on your phone depends on data. And without that data, it's much harder to forecast. And so WMO helps bring countries together and helps encourage them to share that data. And that ultimately helps all of us and gives us access to better weather forecasts on a daily basis.
What is coming up in your work, Lauren Stewart, and what can we expect from the WMO?
So in a couple of months, or I guess in December, we've got the 28th Conference of the Parties, which will be taking place in Dubai. And so WMO will be present there, and we will be doing several events on the state of the climate. We'll be releasing a new report on that. We've also got a new report coming up on the state of climate in the context of health, which is a really crucial and important topic these days, and that comes out quite soon. Of course, we also are focusing a lot these days on Early Warnings for All, which is one of the big UN partnership initiatives. And the goal of this is to ensure that everyone on Earth has access to early warnings by the end of 2027. And this will save lives and livelihoods, and it will also reduce the losses and the damages that result from these storms and other extreme events. And it will also help safeguard the sustainable development gains that we are striving to achieve by 2030. So those are some big agenda items for us in the coming months and years.
From the World Meteorological Organization, we've been speaking with Scientific Officer Lauren Stewart. You can find links to all the reports and news we just talked about in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Lauren, thank you for helping us out, looking at the big picture here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.
The summer of 2023 was shocking, even to longtime climate alarmists. The heat, instant floods, wildfires the size of Europe, pretty well every record smashed. It was the hottest summer ever recorded, month after month. Almost too strange to believe, extreme heat has not stopped, even in November. Like vast clouds, patches of hotter air float around in both hemispheres. The heat in South America is so strange, nothing compares. Searing temperatures like 39 degrees C over 100 Fahrenheit crept up into cool mountain cities in the Andes. You heard Taylor Swift canceled a concert in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, after a fan died of heat. Last week, people there sweated through the hottest nighttime temperature ever recorded in South America. The following day was the hottest temperature at any time ever measured in that continent. With humidity, it felt like 158 degrees Fahrenheit, 70 degrees C. That is stunning, isn't it? What really threw me, at the very same time, it was T-shirt weather in Siberia, in the northern hemisphere, in the mid-60s Fahrenheit, 18 degrees C, in November. Russians were out in the heat instead of in the snow and frozen ground, as has always been known there. Satellite heat maps show a big red blare over eastern Siberia. That is unreal. We have entered science fiction-level warming. In science fiction, and in real science, pessimists predicted the global average temperature would warm 2 degrees C over pre-industrial by the year 2100. In November 2023, we got our first taste, 77 years early. For 2 days, planet Earth was 2 degrees hotter than before the fossil fuel bonanza. To be official, global average temperatures would remain at 2 degrees C for at least several years, if not 10 years. We are not there, but it is starting.
1.5 is deader than adornium, and anybody who understands the physics knows that. That is a shortcoming of our scientific community to not make clear to the political leaders what the situation is. In the next several months, we're going to go well above 1.5 C on a 12-month average. For the rest of this decade, the average is going to be at least 1.5. The scenarios that you would need to stay under 2 degrees are just not, they're imaginary. When I gave a TED talk more than a decade ago, Earth's energy imbalance was about 6/10 of a watt per square meter, which is equivalent to 400,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs per day. That imbalance has now doubled. That's why global warming will accelerate. 1 watt per meter squared is an enormous forcing to try to overcome. You want to do it by extracting CO2, it costs you more than $100 trillion. It's not going to happen. I showed a graph on the carbon intensity of energy. We've reduced it from 0.8 to 0.7 in 50 years. It's not going to go to zero in a few decades. And there are no plans to do that. So heat is pouring into the planet at twice the rate. That is a principal reason why we're getting these extremely large month after month global temperatures. This is the correct physics, and it's the real world. And it sometimes takes the community a while to catch on. So young people need to understand what they are being handed by the older generation. They can't allow fake stories to mislead them.
As you heard from James Hansen and the World Meteorological Organization agrees, Earth is likely to experience a 12-month period of 1.5 degrees of heat for at least 1 year in the next five, and that's before 2030. Last week, we learned the combination of fossil multinational companies and national producers are developing enough fossil fuels to create, as the Guardian newspaper put it, hellish 3 degrees C of climate heating. That harsh revelation came with the 2023 Production Gap Report. Be sure to listen to my interview last week with Stuart Lazarus of the Stockholm Environment Institute, if you can face the reality. Find a link in my show blog at ecoshock.org. So let's get a view from the German public broadcaster Deutsche Welle. This short report was broadcast November 20th, 2023.
The United Nations has warned that Earth is on track to warm by almost 3 degrees by the end of the century. That's despite pledges from many countries to cut emissions. A new report from the UN's Environment Programme says current promises to mitigate global warming are no longer feasible or credible, highlighting how emissions have increased again last year. It says drastic climate action is now needed to limit to climate change and its impacts around the world. Let's get more from climate reporter Tim Schauenberg, who joins us from Bonn in Western Germany. Welcome, Tim. Just tell us why the current climate action and promises aren't enough.
Well, globally, investments in new oil and gas projects are actually increasing instead of falling. Emissions are increasing instead of falling. That leads us to be on track to heat the planet by 3 degrees by the end of the century instead of limiting it to 1.5 degrees as the global community has pledged, which would have devastating effects on humans, nature, and our economies. Secondly, net zero targets globally cover only 80% of what is needed to reduce climate change to 1.5 degrees if fully implemented. And that is the problem. Most countries do not deliver on their pledges. They do not have roadmaps. They do not put these net zero pledges into law. They don't have an actual plan how to reach these targets, which leads the authors of the report to the conclusion that as time is running out, those net zero targets are in many cases not feasible or at least unrealistic and therefore not credible anymore. Just to give one number, to be on track with the 1.5 degrees target, we would need to reduce emissions by 42% by 2030 compared to what would be reached with current policies. If we keep emitting as we're doing it right now for the next couple of years, this budget will be exhausted and used up quicker as we actually can afford. And that's why scientists really point to the fact that it's crucial to curb emissions drastically in this decade and not postpone climate action.
Again, that strong warning from DW News is based on the UNEP 2023 Production Gap Report. Links at ecoshock.org, including how to download the report for yourself. Seeing our natural environment, so full of species, rich in innovation and wonder, being stripped away by my own civilization, I began Radio EcoShock in 2006. At first, it was just on one station. Now it's over 100. In my view, we humans blew past the best chance and for a natural balance. And it was at the Copenhagen Climate Meeting of 2009. In an ironic universe, the weather outside the conference halls then was brutally cold in that Danish December. Tens of thousands of climate activists and concerned citizens stood shivering outside the hallways, locked out, calling for salvation from the coming heat, the storms, the high seas. And that was a hinge moment of failure. Desperate hope returned in 2015, when the Paris Climate Agreement was signed. Pretty well no government in the world came even close to living up to the weak promises they made there. Instead, humans expanded fossil fuel burning more and more each year. Now the time of warning is over. The future has arrived. Now it is coming down to choices about survival. Can we get off these fossil drugs? Can we unite to avoid a worse hell arriving? I'll stick around as long as I am able, trying to find out. I hope you will too. I'm Alex. Thank you for listening and still caring about this world and all the creatures in it.